Could you describe California in a sentence or two without resorting to some of the old snarky lines about the state? It's really big physically, ranging from the below sea level lows of Death Valley to the highest peak in the continental United States at Mount Whitney. Then there are the people, from out there Hollywood to the dry and rural Surprise Valley. Our guest this hour sampled the places and people of the state for the better part of 5 years as a travel writer for the Sacramento Bee. Sam McManus's work has assembled between the covers of a new book, Crossing California, A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. Sam McManus's career includes writing and editing at the San Francisco Chronicle and sports writing for the L.A. Times. Sam's profiles and essays have also appeared in the New York Times and Wall Street Journal and other biggies. Sam McManus, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Oh, hi, Jeffrey. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Pleasure to have you. Your terminology in writing is certainly yummy. When you describe things like one pump of the brake pedal towns, the I-5 grapevine as the DMZ that separates Southern California from the Central Valley, what did you set out to do here?
Well, a little backstory first. I was with the Sacramento Bee for 11 years, but I never was a travel writer. I was a features writer. I wrote profiles. And then one day late in 2011, I get a tap on my shoulder in the office, which is, you know, you never want to see your boss come up and tap you on the shoulder, right,
right.
Jeffrey? So I get this tap, and he says, come with me. So I come to his office, says, we're starting this new section called California Traveler, and we want you to write a column on California and travel. And I had never been a travel writer, and most of the travel writing I had read to that point, I've since become an aficionado of the New York Times travel section, which is just a wonderful piece of work each week. But anyway, at that point, most of the travel writing I had read was, oh, well, we found this great hotel in Carmel, and then we had brunch here, and the Eggs Benedict was great. And then we dipped our toes in the sand and burrowed in for the rest of the afternoon, and then we went to dinner. So I didn't want it to be kind of the chronological here's what I did on my summer vacation type of writing. So I proposed to them, and for some reason they bought it, that I write about, that I find the less obvious, the less, you know, weekend in Napa type story, or Lake Tahoe or Yosemite, or like I said, Carmel or Disneyland. And I find more unusual places, and more important, at least to me, was to find the people behind those places. Because when you're traveling and you visit someplace, you're actually interacting not just with the place itself, but with the people who run those places. And so I was just fascinated by with some of these lesser California attractions, with the people who run them, what their motivations are. And so you know, my boss, my editor bought it and said, sure, go ahead. Here's the company car. And I drove. I drove the length of the state so many times, Jeffrey, you would not believe it. It was quite an experience. It was almost 5 years of doing this, and had a lot of memories.
Did you keep track of the car mileage?
No, I didn't. It was a hybrid Honda, though, so it got good gas mileage. So so my carbon footprint may have been strong. But I was, you know, at least it was a hybrid, right?
Right.
But no, it was, you know, it was a ton. I would drive from Sacramento to Southern California a lot. I mean, I'm talking, I spent a lot of time in the desert. I didn't think I was going to, but I found some fascinating things and people down there. So I drove a lot. And then, of course, up north, too, you know, all the way to the border. And so, yeah, it was a lot of mileage and a lot of listening to public radio. In fact, listen to the Jefferson Exchange, too. So a little plug in there for you guys.
Thanks for that. aside from listening to the Jefferson Exchange, though, you had a quest that you list first in the intro to find the geographic center of California. Where is that?
That is south of Fresno in the Sierra foothills, and I never made it. I kept putting it off, you know, so it's right off Highway 99. Well, not right off. See, that's the problem.
Yeah,
it's not right off Highway 99. It's you know, you kind of wind your way, and all there is this plaque marker up there, and I Googled it. I did my research, right? I did Google, and so I actually had seen the marker. And so I said, you know, it was more symbolic than anything, you know, because there's really not a whole lot to see there. I just figured on my way back from one of the Southern California trips, I would make the pilgrimage, right? And so finally, one day late, you know, about in 2016, about when, you know, kind of the, you know, the section and, you know, the columns was about to end, I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I got up there and I got lost. And so finally I, you know, my GPS wasn't working. And I just said, you know, kind of put my head on the steering wheel and I go, you know what? I don't need to find the geographic center or any type of center of California because the place is just too vast, too varied with different ideologies, different, you know, geographic topographies. It's just, you know, you cannot sum up California in just one gesture.
So having been not a native, I mean, you mentioned that you were born outside the state, but, you know, been in schools there since kindergarten. I mean, you knew about the diversity of California landscapes and people. Were you still surprised, though?
I was surprised to find that you can't easily categorize people. Like, you know, you might think that everyone in Orange County, for instance, is conservative and you know, kind of red meat conservatives. But I found a lot of people that have differing views and have contradictory views everywhere in the state. You know, I found Bay Area conservatives. yes, they do exist. But also, what surprised me was just, and the one common linkage, I think, from everyone I met and the places that I was at, was that people are dreamers in California. They have big ideas. And, you know, your big idea may be to find a buddy and start this computer company named after, you know, a fruit and turn into like a trillion-dollar company. That may be your big dream. Or it may be to open a museum of history in granite in a small town off Interstate 8 near the Mexican border.
Which we'll get to in just a moment. Sam McManus, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hang on, Sam. The book is called Crossing California. We'll come back and talk more with its author, Sam McManus, and take phone calls and emails from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Sam McManus, who has a long history in California newspapers and had not been a travel writer until 7 years ago when his authors, his editors at the Sacramento Bee said, you know, why don't we send you on a trip? And so after 5 years of going back and forth across the state of California writing various columns, he ended up with enough stuff for this book called Crossing California, A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about some of these great places and people in California. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Sam, if you would, talk about the organization of the book. It starts geographical, but it seems to go in a different direction as the book goes on. Kind of like your travels, I would think.
Right, yeah. I wanted to divide the book into more thematically than geographically, although there is, you know, the desert, Los Angeles, San Francisco / Bay Area. But then I get into, like, kind of a New Age chapter where different types of, you know, of seekers and places to seek. Like, one is a silent retreat up in north of Nevada City. And then there was California as a Canvas, which is a whole section on outsider artists, you know, artists who have rejected the mainstream, rejected, you know, the museum, and have been rejected by museums. But outsider art is a big thing in California. And then also roadside attractions, because, you know, I have a cheesy streak and I kind of like these roadside attractions. And then the last thing is that I broke down and went to Disneyland. I have kind of issues with Disneyland because I grew up at least during my formative years in Orange County and 10 miles from Disneyland, and only went once as a kid and never really liked it. So I went back as an adult. So anyway, so that's kind of how the book is divided. You know, the two main geographic centers, and then more thematically. And yes, I spent a lot of time up in the north, you know, north part of the state as well.
where we broadcast to. The contrasts are really what make the book really tasty. The idea that you went from a place of monastic silence to the studio audience for two broke girls laughing on command. I mean, those things could not be more far apart.
Yeah, let me cut in there about the TV show taping. One of my editors said, you know, I always hear about film before a live audience. What is that? Go down there, you know, to the San Fernando Valley and experience what that's like. And so I would say of the 60 essays in this book, I really enjoyed 57 of them. one of them I did not enjoy was the TV show taping of Two Broke Girls. And it's not necessarily the quality of Two Broke Girls. That's beside the point. It was just the tediousness and the sheer, you know, artificiality of being in a TV show audience where they make you, you know, they do like 15 takes of the same joke. And you have to laugh, you know, hilariously and uproariously at every single take. And after a while, it's like, you know. And I really felt, you know, I'm in pretty good shape. But after being there from 2 p.m. to like 11 at night, and they wouldn't let you leave either. So you couldn't, like, go to the bathroom. Yes, I'm not joking. It was a death march watching this TV show taping. I guess there's nothing funny, you know, watching how the sausage made at a sitcom. So anyway. That was I fully recommend almost all of these spots. TV show taping, I would think twice unless you're really, really into the show and you know, a big fan. So that was quite a trip.
So you actually joined a marathon in Death Valley, didn't you?
In winter, thank goodness, because obviously, you know, it's like the surface of the sun in the summer. So, I really enjoyed Death Valley in the winter. It was, first of all, you know, you want to try to find a winter where the blooms are going to be really vivid and strong. The winter I went there, it was sort of pretty good, but it's just like stark and beautiful and thank goodness a temperate climate in the winter. I would recommend to anyone going to Death Valley in January, which is when I did it.
And you actually got to see rain there.
Yes, it rained, and even like the forest rangers were kind of giddy about that because they get like very, very little, like fractions of an inch of rain a year. And, even like one of the rangers came out and stared up at the sky and said, "It's raining." So, yeah, it was interesting.
Sam McManus, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, for 5 years traveled the state of California writing travel columns for the Sacramento Bee. They are compiled in a book called Crossing California, A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. You had already dropped the concept of the Museum of History in Granite. Not the Museum of History, but the Museum of History in Granite. So
yes.
What is that about?
Okay, so it's just what its name implies, Jeffrey. It's the Museum of History made in granite. Okay, so let me explain. Way down in on your way to Yuma on Interstate 8, you know, you're maybe 20 miles from the Arizona state line, just past those beautiful white sand dunes. There's this town called Felicity. And it is basically not so much a town. There's not even a gas station. There is one exit. It's just this giant area owned by a French national named Jacques Estelle, who is just a fascinating gentleman. When I interviewed him, he was in his mid-80s. And the last time I checked, everything's fine. he comes from money. And he had a kind of an interesting backstory with World War II. He's a parachutist. So he's kind of a Renaissance man. But he got this land in California and decided, I want to document the history of the world. He's a history buff. And so I said, well, why did you choose granite as your medium? And he goes, because it's permanent. it'll be here long before, long after I'm gone, long after you're gone. Granite has a, you know, kind of this permanence that I really wanted. And so if you look at it, and the New York Times did a piece on this place too, and they hired, the New York Times budget was a little bigger than SAC-B. They hired an airplane and did aerial photos of it. And from above, it's really interesting because it's not only vertical granite slabs, but, you know, horizontal. So it's almost like this man's Stonehenge, but we know who built it. and also though, so he hired, he didn't chisel the history of the world on the granite by himself. He hired people. He hired artists to come and do it. So there, he starts at the beginning, Jeffrey. He starts at the Big Bang.
Wow.
And by the time I was there, I think he got to Watergate. So he's made a lot of progress. You know, he still has a ways to go. Anyway, and so on these slabs, there is the history of what the Big Bang was and what it resulted in. Of course, you know, that's controversial to some people. But anyway, so, you know, and then he went through wars and civilizations rising and falling. And it's just incredible to walk with him on it. And, you know, sometimes he has some snarky takes on history. But it's just, he tends to go with people that show up. And he does get, you know, thousands of people, especially in the spring when it's, you know, when the weather is, you know, is bearable. Anyway, he will go with you and kind of show you what is there and why he did it. And it's just a wonderful, weird place. You know, not all of them, not all roadside attractions kind of live up to the billing. Like, I went to the Banana Museum, the International Banana Museum.
I noticed.
Yes, at the Salton Sea, and that was a little bit of a disappointment. But, you know, they can't all be winners, right?
Right, right. Okay. Well, a lot of winners in California, though, and a lot
well,
of things.
That's
you,
true.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. You
true.
End up scratching your head as you read the book. It's called Crossing California: A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. Sam McManus spent 5 years crossing California, working for the Sacramento Bee, creating all these stories. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Offer up a place in California that you believe is full of wonder or weirdness, or perhaps both. 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. I'm struck by some juxtapositions here, though, because the proprietor of the history, the Museum of History in Granite, certainly wants people to visit him. But then there's also you introduce us to a person who shows off geoglyphs near Blythe that are ruined by visitors. First of all, what are geoglyphs?
Geoglyphs are, it's kind of like petroglyphs, but it's actually on the landscape, and there's kind of a, not a controversy, but a disagreement on how they got there. gentleman who showed me the geoglyphs, you know, said that they were ancient. They were part of, Aztecan ruins. Other people say that they were man-made later. So basically it's just, like Native American symbols, like, you know, say, you know, a phoenix or a bird, but just in large constructions. Basically, they scrape off the first couple, you know, this is out in the desert. They scrape off the first couple inches and then, you know, of the soil, and then arrange rocks in a certain way. And so they've been building wind farms out, you know, in the desert east of Blythe, and that is threatening these geoglyphs. And so so I went and visited that. And, a lot of the, you know, the Native American tribes, they really kind of discourage people from, like, clamoring to this place because they worry that they're going to hurt the geoglyphs. But he was very gracious in showing me around says that if people are respectful, then, you know, because he's proud of these geoglyphs, but it's just, you know, you just don't want people trampling on what he considers, you know, a sacred place.
So from the very old to the very new, there is a NASA facility out there, which sounds like it was full of security power trips. And then from space vehicles to the kind on the ground, Johnny Cloud has a lot of cars. Tell us about Johnny Cloud's installation.
Yeah, Johnny Cloud was a, it was, now this is like right on the border of Arizona and California. And it was kind of, he did not set out to do a roadside attraction. You know, a lot of people set out to do this and like they, you know, they set it up. He just loved cars. It was a paternal thing. His father was into cars, and all of a sudden he just, you know, you got to have a hobby. And so this guy's hobby was to collect all these cars and farm machines. And, you know, people started driving by his place and seeing all these cars, and people would stop. And then he said, okay, well, if people are stopping, then I'm going to, you know, I guess I should maybe do something to make this, you know, worth their while. And so, he's set up, you know, kind of a little tour, and he's a farmer, and he sold his farm. So now he has time, and, you know, he has the money. He still lives on the site, but, you know, but the farm, lettuce, has been sold to a, you know, big, corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got time. And so, you know, he's spending his days kind of, you know, among his precious possessions. And his was kind of a wistful visit, not like kind of wacky like some of them. It was kind of interesting, to kind of get into this man's head. He's kind of, laconic, doesn't talk a whole lot, but you kind of get the point of what he was trying to do. It was kind of an interesting place.
We are talking to Sam McManus, a former writer for the Sacramento Bee, about his 5 years spent visiting all sorts of places and people in California. The book is called Crossing California, A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. Let's go to L.A. You took the TMZ bus there. What did they show you?
That was, TMZ showed you everywhere celebrities have misbehaved. Basically, where they've OD'd. Where they arrested, where Hugh Grant was arrested for, do you remember this one, for picking up the prostitute, Divine Brown? This was many, many years ago. So many other celebrity bad behaviors happened. People tend to forget that Hugh Grant had his moment, right?
He did.
So, yes, so, you know, they show you all that sort of thing, where Lindsay Lohan was arrested and spent $43,000 at a hotel, at the Roosevelt Hotel in, you know, 2 days. And the same Roosevelt Hotel, by the way, where JFK reportedly shacked up with Marilyn Monroe. This is according to TMZ. So the TMZ tour, I kind of felt like I needed to take a shower after that, you know. it was kind of a little bit crass. And, you know, you have to kind of accept when, you know, TMZ, the television show, is a gossipy show all about, you know, celebrities, very shallow, not like public radio worthy. A lot of maybe public radio listeners might say, you know, tisk tisk. But it was a little fun, I got to admit. But I also kind of felt like, wow, I'm ceding the moral high ground here by going on this tour. But, you know, the tour was sold out. And, you know, people, when they go to Hollywood, they don't want to see, you know, the map of the Hollywood stars anymore, you know, like Lucille Ball's home. They want to see where the Pollo Loco on Hollywood Boulevard, where Brad Pitt got his start. Yes, he dressed up in a chicken suit at the Pollo Loco before he got any parts in L.A. and, you know, tried to, you know, carried a sign out on the front, you know, one of those guys. So they want to see, you know, stuff like that, where Michael Richards of Seinfeld kind of
ended his career
during during his comedy show. All that kind of stuff. Of course, they took us near Michael Jackson's house and where Whitney Houston died. And this was only a couple years after Whitney Houston's death. And that's kind of where I felt like too soon, you know.
Yeah.
The TMZ tour. There's also another tour there where you it's called the Hollywood Dead Tour, where you only tour the resting places or where people died. I went with a bunch of women from Ventura County. Well, I didn't go with them. They were on the tour with me, who just could not wait. They were like giddy about visiting Marilyn Monroe's grave. They all bent down and kissed the crypt where she was.
And there are pictures to prove it. Yes.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
A couple seconds before a break here, but I want to ask about the tour at the Scientology Center. It sounds like you needed a fact checker along with you.
Yes. Actually, there are two places. There's the Scientology Center, where it's in a lovely, architecturally beautiful former bank in Los Angeles, Hollywood, right there on the border. And yes, they did try to convert me. But it was kind of an interesting look at what they, I could go on with this, and I know you have a break coming up, but they kind of twist the facts about L. Ron Hubbard to fit a certain narrative. Let's put it that way.
All right, fair enough. The book is called Crossing California, A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. Sam McManus compiled all these bits for the Sacramento Bee, and they're all together in one cover now. You can join the conversation on The Exchange when we come back in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for joining us. Sam McManus is our guest, a longtime worker at several newspapers in California. At the Sacramento Bee, he spent 5 years crisscrossing the state, burning a lot of rubber and gasoline, getting to know the people and the places. And that work is reflected in his book, Crossing California, A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. Perhaps you can relate to either the wonder or the weirdness or both. Share your stories as well as we continue down the road with Sam. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. We're going to move on to San Francisco now. And before we get into specific places, I just want to ask, when you enter a major urban area, how did you decide which things to hit and write about?
Yeah, you could write a whole book about travel destinations in San Francisco, and I think probably several people have. I wanted to look for things that represented kind of a change in the city. For instance, not all these essays, we've been talking about some of the wackier or quirkier ones. Mm-hmm. Not all of them are, there are a few essays that are serious. I talk about the gentrification of the Mission District, for instance.
Right.
And so I wanted to see how, because I lived and worked in San Francisco at the Chronicle for, I think, 6 years, I was able to see how things changed when I came back after I, was up in Sacramento. And the Mission District's kind of gentrification, not necessarily a bad thing. It spruces up neighborhoods and areas, but also, then what happens to the longtime residents, right? So it's kind of a two-faced coin. When I went back to the Mission District, I saw that there was an entire restaurant that only served grilled cheese, and it was like a $25 grilled cheese sandwich. And I'm like, wow, I guess my $5 burritos in the Mission District are not enough anymore. So, with a lot of the techies coming in. So I wanted to do places like that. I took a tour with a homeless man who showed me the Tenderloin, warts and all. Mm-hmm. The Tenderloin being the very low income, high crime, and they're trying to clean it up.
Why is it called that? I've always wondered, Sam, why is it called the Tenderloin?
Oh, there are several theories about that, and I wish I could remember one of them that they told me, but somebody said that it used to be a meatpacking district, and of course, part of the meat, the Tenderloin.
Sure.
But other people dispute that, say, no, that's not it at all. It was a
red light district, maybe?
It was like a euphemism that cops would use, given that there was a lot of, prostitution in that area. So there are several things. There's no, one definitive definition of why they call it the Tenderloin.
Okay, so what was that tour like then?
Well, you know, so we started the tour. He says this guy named Del Seymour, I'll never forget him. He was just he now is no longer homeless, by the way. He actually lives in the East Bay and takes BART into the Tenderloin to give the tours now. But at the time, he was homeless. And he just gave you this is what it's like. And we started off at a donut shop that just reeked of marijuana. I was like, okay, this is a good way to start the tour. And there was an arrest, like right at Civic Center Plaza as we left the donut shop, and it went from there. But he showed you Compton's cafeteria, where back in the 1950s, there was an uprising for the gay and lesbian community. This was before Stonewall in New York. Even he showed us there's a church in the Tenderloin that opens its doors to the homeless, and we walked right through the church and talked to some of the people. It was still in the morning, so people were still asleep, and we would walk through the church. It was just stark and really makes you think about what we do to, kind of to help the homeless. And also showed us single occupancy residency housing, which is old hotels that they've converted so people, with low incomes could live there. And so we toured that, and it was just this is not part of San Francisco the Chamber of Commerce wants you to see when they talk about tours. They want you to go to Fisherman's Wharf, mm-hmm. or Union Square, or the Castro, or Golden Gate Park. They don't want you to go to see kind of the warts and all of the Tenderloin. So that's what drew me there.
But you get to see a whole different world as well with the Google Glass Explorer package.
Yes.
What did that involve?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that was. Kind of an essay that I really liked, and it doesn't hold up well over time because Google Glass is now passé and no one wears it anymore. But for a while, Google Glass was very controversial in San Francisco because a lot of people. This was just 2014, when the techies were really starting to kind of move in and take over the city, and you'd see these people walking around in Google Glass, and other people would just sneer at them and sometimes assault them because they're wearing Google Glass. So there was a hotel in San Francisco that was offering a weekend package in which they would let you use a pair of Google Glass, which at that time was going for more than $1,000, and it wasn't readily available either. So I said, okay, I'll try. And people were pretty, warm around the city, and people were pretty standoffish. They said, don't film me with that, because, all you had to do is touch the temple of the glass,
right,
and you could record video. And this was a time now everyone's videoing everybody else, and so this was kind of a snapshot in time of a period in San Francisco where the techies and the, I don't want to say Luddites because they're not Luddites, just kind of people that value their privacy, I guess, would clash. And basically I was kind of not treated too well. I wasn't shouted down, but I could just tell the vibe was not good walking around the streets wearing Google Glass. So I was happy to return the glass to the hotel at the end of the experiment.
I bet. I want to ask about this dining experience, a restaurant called Opaque. I wasn't aware that there was such a dining kind of experience. What goes on there?
Yeah, I went with somebody I call the palate. He's because he really loves food. Actually, it's my son who lives in San Francisco. So anyway, but I wanted to have somebody there that really appreciated food. So this was part of a bigger story where I was talking about sensory experiences in San Francisco. And so there are specific sensory experiences for auditory. And there's a place called the Wave Organ where you can actually hear kind of musical sounds that the bay itself makes. So anyway, but Opaque. is a place where you dine in the dark and completely, like you cannot see anything. They lead you in there, and it's kind of a sensory experience where, because you can't see, your sense of taste is really heightened. And it was just a fascinating experiment. They choose, it's kind of a price fixed menu where they choose it. And so I wasn't sure what I was eating. Something that tasted kind of like a grape turned out to be a pudding. And, you know, it was just fascinating. And, you know, I almost knocked over my water glass, but then you adapt. And so it's not only like a dining experience, but it's also kind of, you get a greater appreciation for all your senses just by experiencing this. And again, San Francisco is such a foodie town, right?
Right.
And this is just another, I don't want to say gimmick, but well, yeah, maybe it is a gimmick that people flock to. So yeah, it was interesting.
So now to give us a contrast in dining experiences between that and the Samoa Cookhouse in our neck of the woods in Humboldt County.
Yes, I love the Samoa Cookhouse. First of all, I was coming back, you know, from kind of, you know, touring the Redwoods, and I said, you know, I've heard about this place, and I went there on a Sunday, and, you know, they have those long tables for, like, you know, for the logging, you know, that they used to feed the loggers back in the day. And so I get there, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, 70, 80-year-old men. I just sat down and joined them, and it was just wonderful. You know, the massive amounts of food, I mean, I couldn't finish. I'm talking, Jeffrey, a large mound of scrambled eggs. Not, you know, I'm talking maybe soccer ball. Well, okay,
that back up the dump truck, that kind of delivery of
yeah. And but it was just great. And they have, you know, great period, you know, photos from back in the day of, you know, when logging was king. And yeah, it was just great. And kind of, you know, I know you haven't mentioned this, but kind of my third kind of food thing was way up near Mammoth, in the town of Lee Vining, where a gas station has a 4-star dining restaurant attached to it. So yeah, you think, I'm going to stop at the gas station for some food. You think of maybe Slim Jims and one of those like sausage type hot dogs that's greasy and goes around on the spit, right?
Right.
No, this was like a 4-star, you know, Mexican food. They hired a chef from, I think, the Bay Area, and it was like just packed. And so yeah, if you're ever in Lee Vining, stop by the gas station. There's only one gas station, and you can have a great dinner. So
that's amazing. Let's we have an email here from Paul on Sterling Creek. He wants to know if you visited the metal sculptures honoring veterans east of Wairika. It's both interesting and strange, he says. And he says he's looking forward to reading the book. So he's talking about, I looked this up, the Living Memorial Sculpture Garden. Have you been to that place?
It's off Highway 97, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I have not been there. That was one of the places I didn't make. Actually, I passed it on my way to the, you know, lava beds.
Uh-huh.
And also when I was up there, I was at the internment camp, which I recommend. So if I ever get back, yes, I will go to that. But I do know of its existence, and yeah, it's right off the road, so it's easy to get on and off.
For the folks who were thinking about going to where the internment camp was at Tule Lake, not much of it left, we understand, but what did you see that
Right, and you kind of see it from a distance. There is kind of not exactly where the camp is now. You know, it's kind of fenced off, at least when I went there a couple years ago, so it may have changed. But there is a museum, like a small museum, a little bit down the road. As part of a, like a, I think a, you know, like a more county museum, but the actual internment camp itself, no, you can't. You know, you can see, kind of, there's a building that's still there, a structure, but I think it's just, you know, it's a place to reflect on how we treated, you know, people during World War II, and. You know, it's stark, and I'm kind of glad that it's not, you know, I mean, I would like to see maybe, you know, if we could, you know, get inside, but I'm glad that they haven't made it into something really commercial or, try to exploit it, at all. So, yeah, but it is, if you're in the area and if you know your history, that's a profound place to stop.
Sam, for all the people and places you saw, is there one person whose voice above all you still hear in your head from time to time?
Well, I hate to go back to talking about the homeless tour, but Del Seymour. Mm-hmm. He was just so passionate about the Tenderloin and actually proud of it, warts and all. So he is one. There's one guy that I never met because he died a long time ago, but in right off Highway 9 in Fresno, there's the Forestier Underground Garden.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever heard of that, Jeffrey?
I just heard about it last week, yes.
Yeah, and so this is a gentleman who, back in the, 1940s, moved to Fresno, decided, he was Sicilian, moved to Fresno saying, I'm going to be a farmer, and bought some land, and found out that it was all hardtack, which is like basically you can't plant crops on it. And so and it was summer in Fresno, it was 109 out, and he says, I'm going to dig underground. So he spent 9 years digging underground dwelling with gardens. He had citrus trees, I'm talking 20 feet underground, and
wow.
It's still there. And if you're ever in Fresno in August, which, I don't recommend, but go there because it's 55 degrees. And so I just like how somebody took disappointment and made something new out of it. So, I kind of think of that guy a lot, too.
Sure. That is the way of California. The book is called Crossing California, A Cultural Topography of a State of Wonder and Weirdness. Sam McManus wrote it. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey.